to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cunningham.
Oh, sure it is.
Yeah. Still.
A little scramble there.
Hey, our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Yeah.
Can you not hear you?
Yeah, I have these quality headphones on. I can't hear a whole lot.
Take the beans out of your ears.
Yeah. So, Pape Machinery, they're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake, and they've got everything John Deere up there that you could possibly want. Go up and see them. They got tractors, mowers, implements, parts, service. They do it all. Or you can give them a call. The phone number is 530-226-9226, or get them on the web at papemachinery.com. That's P-A-P-E machinery.com.
Yes, and we determined on the ride over here that they are taking over the world. They're everywhere.
Yeah, world domination.
You can't go wrong with world domination. Well, no. Unless you're...
As long as everybody's included.
Yeah, and there's equity. Don't forget that. Just ask Klaus Schwab.
Yeah.
All right. So today we're doing the next step here on the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Today we're going to focus on, I say we, using that term very loosely, Bill and I will be riding along in the back seat while our guest, Paul Skinner, drives the bus. And the focus today is on exploitation. So he is a member of Team Adam, which is the Investigative Resource Provision Unit of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. You'll see it, the abbreviation is NCMEC, N-C-M-E-C. You see it on TV all the time down in the corners on crime shows. We've all seen it a lot and maybe didn't know what that was, so you'll be able to kind of look behind the curtain this time. He has professional experience of 4 decades working in municipal policing and working in the criminal justice system in the prosecution of offenders. Yay! Paul is a graduate of the FBI National Academy, where he majored in the management of cold case investigations. Additionally, he has experience as an adjunct instructor for the Humphreys University teaching criminal justice students in advanced and complicated investigations. As a member of Team Adam, Paul brings the experience and expertise in the areas of cold case investigations, spatial behavior of offenders, and the prosecution of no-body homicide cases, which is pretty outside the realm of what most of us have been doing. So before we get into our topic, what's spatial behavior of offenders? What does that mean?
It's a fancy term for patterns, really. As human beings, we all have patterns.
Yeah.
Patterns of movement. And
so are they likely to go here, go there, see this person, that person, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, we follow the path of least resistance as a matter of habit.
Okay.
And so it's a matter on spatial testing and spatial investigations. It's a matter of determining what is the least amount of movement necessary to go from point A, where the crime occurred, to point B, where the person, the body is found, or another crime occurs. And so it's, like I said, it's a fancy term for a very simplistic process, really, when you think about it, because all you're looking at is the human behavior pattern of finding the path of least resistance. It's almost like looking for a missing person. If a missing person who is suffering from dementia or some other type of mind-altering issue is faced with going uphill or downhill, they go downhill.
Makes sense.
If they're faced with dry versus wet, they go towards wet.
They do?
Yes. And so with those
okay, items see, I wouldn't have figured that one. Why is
yes.
that?
We don't know.
Oh.
We really don't know.
It's just a thing.
It's a thing. And we find that especially true with missing children who are on the autism spectrum or adults who are suffering from some type of dementia. That they will gravitate towards water. And that's usually the first place that law enforcement will go to search, and they'll actually lock it down, meaning they will hold it in case that person does get out of their perimeter and come back towards him. So spatial patterns is just
interesting.
That. It's determining the pattern that somebody would most likely take to either make things easier on themselves for ingress and egress, or to make things easier on themselves as far as non-disclosure. So they're not disclosing who they are, where they are, or how they're moving.
Interesting. Well, because it was always like, you know, in all the old crime shows, it's always a joke. The guy breaks out of prison and goes right to his mom's house.
That's a great example.
And they, you know, because it's the first thing I was thinking of. Like, breaks out of prison, we'll just wait at his mom's house, you know, because he'll be here, you know, for dinner or whatever. Is that still a thing?
It is a thing. It's a thing. And when you talk to law enforcement, they'll tell you that the most productive day when they're trying to serve arrest warrants is those days where families gather.
Mm.
And so families gather, and the wanted person shows up at mom's house for apple pie.
Yep.
And law enforcement's waiting for him.
That's just kind of sad, in a way. You would think after all this time as a criminal, you'd be like, hey, wait a second, they're going to look for me at my mom's house. I should probably... Yeah, but no.
These are not the brightest.
Yeah, apparently. It kind of blows my mind. But and then there are other people who are pretty clever, I'm sure. But but still, that's the pattern thing. I could see that being just a big deal. If you have somebody who really follows that kind of stuff, that's really invaluable. Probably at the beginning. Is it good at the front end or on the cold case thing? Does it still come in handy there?
It's really good on the cold case.
Really?
Side of the house, yes. Because especially if you have multiple offenses and multiple cases, you can take a look at those cases, and just with that issue alone, you can tie those cases together, where before you may not have had enough information to tie those cases together. Once you establish this is a pattern of behavior by the offender, then you can tie those together. And I'll give you a quick example if you want.
Yeah.
This is a local example. This is a homicide of a gentleman, and there are two ways into his home, two roadways. One roadway is curvy. The other roadway was straight. So we chose to use the straight roadway as our spatial point of impact or point of reference at the beginning, and started checking for video cameras on that straightaway roadway. And guess who we found? Our suspect fleeing the scene. Now, we could have spent a lot of time
doing the curvy road,
checking both
or
the curvy road. And eventually we did check the curvy road. But on a case like that, you're trying to get your offender in custody as soon as possible so he doesn't reoffend, number one.
Yeah.
And number two, so he doesn't flee the jurisdiction of the court. So you follow that whole spatial pattern concept and say, okay, what's the easiest way for this person to go from point A to point B with the least amount of obstructions and the least amount of chance of detection?
Now, in the event that, somebody is on the run and they're not familiar with an area, isn't there a statistic as to whether or not they usually go left or right when they...
You know, I've heard that quoted by several PhDs on both directions.
Oh, okay. All right.
There's actually a third option, too, and the third option is that there's a circular issue where they will offend in a neighborhood they're not used to. They'll try to flee, and they wind up coming back where the police are doing the investigation. And the police are trying to do the investigation. They look over their shoulder, and there's your suspect
right
back through this crime scene.
Huh.
I've had that happen to me before.
And do they typically return to the scene of the crime like they always say?
It depends on the crime, obviously. If it's a crime that's notorious, if it's a crime involving, especially the arson suspects that like the fire,
yeah.
And they like
they
to
always
see
say that.
The result of that fire,
right.
they will be there. So oftentimes you'll see law enforcement videotaping the crowd who's watching law enforcement videotape.
Right. Interesting.
Terrifying, actually. It's always nice to know that there is some pattern, though, because if there's a pattern, you can spot it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, good for you.
Yeah, look there first.
So,
you know, you never know.
So in the exploitation thing with children, I know you said you had a story. We've probably got, I don't know, 5 minutes till a break. You said it was a two-parter. Want to start there, or you want to do some other stuff first?
Why don't we start there? I want to tell you about a young lady named Heather. And Heather, in the year 2000, was a student at a high school. And this school offered career night. And so they had probably 40 or 50 speakers in different classrooms that would present for 20 minutes at a time on their careers. And so Heather was interested in a class on modeling. So she went to the modeling class with her parents and was told about all the advantages of becoming a young teenage model. The money associated with it, the status associated with it, the fact that you could go from that and parlay that type of of hobby slash occupation into something in the business world. So the offer was made during that 20-minute session to have classes on modeling, and the photographer who led the session was going to lead these classes. And so we started leading these classes. These classes would meet once a week, and she and other girls and their parents would meet. And he would discuss things like, this is what's required of a model nowadays, drug-free, good grades, all those types of things that we as parents want to hear.
Parents want to hear, yeah.
And included in that was also a discussion about the portfolio, the all-important portfolio. You had to have a portfolio of your photographs in order to be considered legitimate in the business or to be considered for any type of work. And he was offering to do those photographs for them if they chose to. But he also made it very clear that he was a product photographer. So he would take pictures of products and would show. So he talked about the importance of hand models and arm models holding particular plumbing products and how nails had to be just right. And, you know, you couldn't have blemishes on your skin of your arms, that type of thing. So each Thursday night they would meet and there would be a discussion. And each Thursday night he would take photographs of these young ladies holding different products. And each Thursday night, they would pick out which photographs they liked to be included in their portfolio. Everything seems on legit. The parents are happy with what's going on. The young ladies are learning something. It looks good. Then they start getting into the minutia. And the minutia was how to walk, how to talk, how to stand. All those things that we as parents sitting there in the audience would go, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
So slowly the parents dropped off, but yet the girls continued to go. So then he transitions the young ladies into product sales, where they're stepping out of a shower, because his particular genre was plumbing fixtures, where they're stepping out of a shower draped in a towel. And that led to more risque photographs, which led to even more risque photographs. And when law enforcement became involved in the case, he was actually selling the photographs to different people.
And these were high school kids?
These were high school girls.
Okay.
And these were brought forward through the U.S. Postal Service, that it intercepted them on sales.
Okay.
At that time, the computer, this is 2000, so we were all in the computer world, but we were all working, I remember, on mainframes and everything else.
Oh, yeah.
So we didn't have everything computerized. So the, quote, photographer gets arrested. He's found guilty. He goes to jail. She has to testify in court, which for a, then she was an 18-year-old girl. That's fairly traumatic to have to testify in court. But he groomed her, and we'll be talking about grooming, to the point where she thought he was her friend and was going to help her break into this new, wonderful, exotic world of money-making modeling. And really what he was doing was selling nude images of her to other people. So, and later on this afternoon, as we continue to talk, I'll tell you about how this case boomeranged back on her this many years later. So this was 2000, and now 2003, we're back on this case again.
Oh, no kidding.
And so my overall objective today is to let you know that these cases involving child exploitation are boomerang cases. They have the potential to come back and occur again and again and again involving the same victim. So if we were to take a parking lot robbery, you get out of your car and you're going to the grocery store, and an unknown guy comes up to you and says, give me your money. You give him your money. He leaves. You leave. Whether he's arrested or not, the chances of it happening to you again.
Same guy or different guy.
Still fairly
either way.
Slim.
Pretty
still
slim,
fairly
yeah.
Slim.
Yeah.
Because as time goes by, you're going to move. He's going to move.
Yeah.
He's going to change. Things are going to change in his life. Things are going to change in your life. You may not be shopping. All kinds of different issues. With exploitation, once something's on the internet, that can be retrieved and brought back up again through a myriad of different sources. And the victim can be victimized one more time.
Right.
A second time.
Dang.
A third time. And time has no bearing here. And so one of the things I'm particular particularly proud of is my organization, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, has a program called Take It Down. So that these young folks that have been involved in these types of situations where there's been inappropriate things posted about them on the internet, we work with the social media platforms and we actually pull it down. Now, I will tell you, at the same time, we also work with the FBI to pull down the person that put that up.
And this includes photos they may have sent to a boyfriend and that kind of thing.
Yes.
So it doesn't always have to be part of some nefarious thing. It could be just bad judgment in your youth.
It very rarely starts out as a nefarious thing.
It
starts out with somebody that they trust.
Mm.
And as you know, if you take a look at our own lives, we're all adults. If you take a look at the last 10 years, all the people that have been in and out of your life in the last 10 years, some you were so happy to see leave that you wished them well. Others are still that burn inside that you wish you still had that personal contact. So the one thing we know with exploitation cases and with cold cases involving nobody homicides is that no relationship remains static. There's no such thing as a static relationship.
We're human
beings and relationships change. Sometimes they get stronger over time and secrets will go to the grave with people. Other times you swore, pinky swore, and all those things you did as a child with your best friend. Now you think to yourself, my goodness, this is crazy.
Yeah. Well, this is kind of, so today is sort of all about the long con.
It is a long con.
It's the long con.
It just won't go away.
Oh, man. So we're here with Paul Skinner from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. You're listening to We the People, and you can find the previous show we did with him August 6th of this year. Today is September 17th, 2023. You can find that at wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm going to do bad things, do it like it's nothing. Being bad has never felt so good. Doing bad things to you.
Now on the day I was born, the nurses all gathered round. And they gazed in wide wonder at the joy they had found. The head nurse spoke up, said, leave this one alone. She could tell right away that I was bad to the bone. Bad to the bone. Bad to the bone. Bad.
There's a lot of songs about badness. Figured we'll play them all today, right? Since we're talking about badness. Ugh. Okay, so onward with the groomer guy.
Oh, okay. I'll be happy to. So that was in 2000.
Yeah.
We're now 2023. Heather is now 40 years old, and she is contacted through LinkedIn and another social media platform by an unknown person that says, I have nude images of you, and I'm going to be putting them on the internet. And I'm going to be exposing you, both professionally and personally, unless, fill in the blank.
Yeah.
Give me X amount of money, that sure. type of thing. She contacts law enforcement. Law enforcement says, it's been since 2000. You have an option. Among your options is to do nothing and to see if this person really has that. Because law enforcement took the original images, the original photographs. And so she chooses to do nothing. And
Oops.
1 week later, she receives a message from one of her girlfriends on Facebook that says, why do I have this nude photo of you in my Facebook mail?
So do nothing was the bad road?
Well, maybe.
Yeah. Well, we don't know. So then the extortion demand, and I use the word extortion, the extortion demand starts coming in from different sources, not just the one source. So clearly her images have been sold on the dark web. So what happened between 2000 and 2023? What happened for her is she's now a professional woman. She is very, very out there on social media, very out there as far as community clubs and events and that type of thing.
Because she's a grown-up, right.
Goes on. She's 40
and the,
years
and the
old.
Person who did this originally went to jail and all that stuff.
Went to jail and
okay.
all that stuff.
All right.
So it turns out that he sold her images prior to going to jail. Those images have been on the dark web for quite some time. They've been floating around. The suspect in this particular case uses what California law enforcement can't use, and that's facial recognition. So he used facial recognition from his own corporation that he worked for to identify her from those images and then started extorting her or trying to extort her for money.
Holy cow.
So
law enforcement can't use that?
No. We are prohibited in California from using facial recognition, only on very, very small, minute cases. We're one of the few states that doesn't allow facial recognition.
And this is, I know the answer is going to be something that's going to make me want to commit a crime, but go ahead and tell us, why is that?
We don't know. California sheriffs, California chiefs of police have lobbied for that. Sexual Assault Investigators Association for California have lobbied for facial recognition. You can't go to a business, a large business in the North State without being caught on facial recognition, and yet law enforcement can't use it in California. I know. It's one of those things that make you scratch your head and go, what?
Is it, so did the California legislature pass a law that said you can't use it, or it's
yes.
just never, is it a,
yes.
you can't use it, or you can't, okay, wow.
Yeah.
All right.
So here we're caught.
But the criminals aren't, so he's able, so it's all good.
Right. He's able to identify her through the use of a private platform.
Yeah.
Facial recognition identifies her, finds out that she's a person of notoriety in her community, and decides to reach out to her and say, I'm going to be doing these types of things.
So he was the one who pretended to be whoever. It was him that had the images.
Exactly.
Still.
Well, we know that he is one of.
Okay.
Could be many. We don't know. So that's kind of a story to tell you about the whole issue that when it comes to child exploitation, and especially this type of offense, when it's involving something that never forgets, the internet,
mm-hmm.
we wind up with a boomerang investigation where this has come back. Here we are 13 years later.
Yeah.
And this has come back in her life. She doesn't deserve this. Clearly, the bad guy got arrested. Clearly, all of his equipment was taken and seized. Clearly, we're not sure if other images are out there. We're not.
So, did they catch him the second time?
Yes. A different guy from the first guy.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
So... And so I offer that as kind of a story to kind of go through this background of what child exploitation really is, because people have an idea. They think they know what it is, but they're not really certain, and they have a kind of a good idea, but it's a complex issue, and it's basically divided into two types, sexual and economic. And some examples of exploitation is online grooming, which we saw an example of with that story. Live streaming, where a young person's been talked into live streaming a certain action or inaction. And then that information is then captured and then put out on the dark web. Of course, radicalization and extremism is obviously an issue that we deal with children and exploitation. And then, of course, modern slavery. Not too much of that here in the North State, a lot of it in the South State, where children are extorted to either perform work at no pay or work at substandard pay, or else there's going to be a revelation as to their past character.
And is that in any particular type of industry, or just depends on what the perpetrator...
It's usually small industry.
Okay.
Because the larger industries, especially industries that have HR departments and stuff like that, they watch for that stuff very
closely. Is it like manufacturing, farming?
Usually manufacturing, farming.
Yeah, okay.
That type of thing. So what we're talking about is what's called CSAM, and you'll see this in the near future on both publications and on the news. because it's become the new catchphrase for child sexual abuse material. And unfortunately, most of the CSAM that's out there on the internet is self-generated. And so it's our poor children that are actually generating this. And they're putting it out on the internet, most of the time to people that they trust. And so as far as some information goes, in a recent survey, 1 out of 5 teenage girls and 1 out of 10 teenage boys are reporting that they have shared nude images of themselves to someone that they've trusted.
Wow, 1 out of 5.
1 out of 5 teenage girls and 1 out of 10 teenage boys.
Wow.
And many cases go unreported. In fact, most cases go unreported because the minors don't view themselves as victims. Yet.
Yet.
Yet. And offenders who engage in crowdsourcing, and that's one of our new terms, right? Crowdsourcing. Offenders that engage in crowdsourcing schemes right now are super difficult to identify because they change their platforms constantly.
And what does that mean?
I'm glad you asked.
Yeah, what does that mean?
So crowdsourcing, the original movement behind crowdsourcing was where we could get like people together that had a common interest or common goal and talked amongst ourselves to see who had what strengths and who had what resources available so that we could reach that common goal. And this started, really, there was a thing called the Birthday Club that started in Fresno, California, and then expanded out through California, where they would change it from names from Birthday Club to Women's Empowerment Group, to where you'd have a buy-in, and you would meet once a month with all these people of like interest, usually at the initial part it was all women, who were trying to get ahead in the professional business world. And they would meet once a week, and they would empower each other and basically say, these are my needs for this, for me to meet.
And when you say meet physically at a location.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So they would have a lunch together, and they would get together and share what they needed to do for their next step in getting further along in the business world, which is a great concept when you think about it. I mean, talk about empowering people back and forth. What they found, though, is that it was a scam. And the scam was, there was a membership dues, there was dues for each meeting, and those dues didn't go to anybody in particular. Well, then along comes the internet. We push the internet out. The internet becomes a place for people to meet of like interests. In fact, we were talking earlier about the algorithm. You know, once you log on and you say, I want to know all about using a plastic worm for bass fishing, tomorrow I've got videos waiting for me on plastic worm bass fishing. So the pedophiles have realized that this is a great source to get people together, to get potential victims together, and do some type of activity that is not related to the sexual process. It may be Warcraft, some type of game people are playing, some type of chat room. And then once that is established, now instead of dealing with one potential victim that you're trying to groom, you now have the potential for 100 victims that are part of your group. Of those, some of those are
They were willing to show up once.
Yeah.
So it's like, odds are, they might show up again.
Exactly. And the thing we all have to remember, especially those of us as parents and grandparents, is that every device is capable of doing this. It doesn't matter if it's a track phone, and it's a pay-as-you-go phone. It doesn't matter if it's an Apple, Android, laptop, iPad. It doesn't matter. Every device is capable of the owner participating in some type of group sourcing event. And so what the offenders are doing is they're using that as something that they can take further and develop them further. And we go back to the word grooming again. And so they're actually step by step, incrementally, introducing these young children to the next step on the grooming process, and that's getting their trust, getting their faith, getting them to understand that nobody understands them quite like you do as the offender. And as we know, once you've done that, then parents become passé.
Sure.
To the
Nobody's running this past the parents because obviously
exactly.
we have this other person who has taken on this predominant role.
Exactly.
Great.
And this other person can take on any persona they want.
Is it usually one person or is it like a two or three or four? Does it just...
There's no pattern.
Huh. Curious.
We've seen them as many as 30 people involved.
Whoa.
Adults, and as few as one involved running five or six crowdsourcing events
Dang.
At one time.
Okay.
And with the advent of gaming, mm-hmm. you have all these young people that really want to excel at whatever game they take on, and you have these really smart gamers that are developing these games that are also using those as a resource pool.
And then you can communicate with them while they're at home.
Yes.
Because you have an open channel at
yes.
that point.
Yeah, and they're suitable for recruitment right at that point. And so the question I usually get asked when I'm talking with groups like the Rotary Club and Lions Clubs and those types of things is how can this happen? You know, this makes no sense. How can it happen? And I have to refer people back to, if you remember, Maslow's theory
mm-hmm.
from high school and college days.
The pyramid.
The pyramid. We have a very vulnerable population, and that's children who are trying to seek acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a vulnerable population of children who are either in foster care or their family life is terrible. So they're seeking something. Now, whether that something is food, water, shelter at the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy, or whether that something is self-actualization and morality at the top of Maslow's hierarchy, they're seeking something. And these offenders know that. And they know exactly which stage of Maslow's hierarchy that they can impact that particular person.
Yeah, just a matter of time before they hit on it, and then they can focus in on what they're actually looking to get out of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so it's troublesome.
Really almost, I mean, when you start looking at it, you know, you kind of relax your mind and you sort of let it drift through that whole idea that you just said. It's like, okay, there'd be like no way to really avoid this. There's no foolproof, like, you know, your kid's going to go to stuff. They're going to go to things. They're going to participate in things. I know there are all sorts of ways that you're going to tell us about that parents can do to make sure these things are not happening. But, I mean, that's a wide open door.
It
is. That is a very wide open door.
We have to
take a really quick break here.
Okay.
But I will tell you on the outgoing that Bill and I could never be sucked into a gaming thing because we bought a video game a really, really long time ago when they first invented them. And we started playing it on Friday after work. And then Monday at 6 o'clock, we still hadn't taken a shower. And our apartment was littered with pizza boxes because we had not been to bed. So we boxed up the game and we took it to work and we gave it to someone else. And we never bought another one. So no one's going to lure us in. We're safe, Bill.
That's right. A sweet
we're
safe. Addiction.
Yeah, we decided we had a little problem there. Oh, my gosh. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Dumb day sleeping in an alley. Didn't matter to me. I got lost walking in the valley. Well, it could have been 1993 when it goes badly. After burning so bright, trying to make sense of a hopeless situation, feels like dying in the middle of the night. When it goes badly, you're alone in the darkness. Nothing's ever ever make it right.
I'm a cop, I'ma lock you up like a criminal. You better run, run, run till you can't run no more.
Rotten criminals. Don't even try it. We've got Paul Skinner out there with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children who will hunt you down forever, basically, right? Did you guys hunt him down forever? Is there a limit? on time?
We give law enforcement that information, and they'll hunt you down. You better believe it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So they're going to chase you around forever. Okay. Back to the crowdsourcing that Bill and I can't do because we don't have video games.
I was curious. Is there any one particular website or platform that they tend to gravitate to, like TikTok or you know, one of these social media sites that you find more abuse on?
No, they're
that's too bad.
No, they're widespread, and it seems like every week we have more platforms that pop up where some genius person has developed a new platform, and that platform is now advertised as being the gamers platform or the platform for elementary students, you know, that type of thing. So it's across the board.
Is it common? Okay, so if it's like a gaming thing, guess I'm out of the loop on this. Obviously, I already made my confession at the end of the last segment. But they go there? Is this like summer camp for gaming? Like, how old are these kids? Like, when they crowdsource this, is this high school age? Is this elementary? Or is it kind of all over the place?
That's a great question. And the answer is there
take
is...
Take that, Bill.
Yeah, Bill, take that. The answer is if the offender, whether the offender is a child or an adult,
right,
knows how to set up a game, then they've just crowdsourced.
Oh.
So it's not uncommon for us to deal with people that once we identify through the IP address who the offender is, it's not uncommon for the offender to be a 13-year-old boy.
Oh.
It's not uncommon.
Whoa.
It just, you know, we have these kids that were unlike you and I, where we were spending our time outside playing, having a good time. They're spending their time learning how to program, and they're learning how to set up games and that type of thing.
And then they figure out how to move it one click down and make it pay.
Yeah, and the way they do that is well, as we talked about before, is grooming. And grooming, the offender gets the satisfaction from each step in the grooming process. Unlike the rapist gets satisfaction from the event.
Okay.
The groomer gets satisfaction for each step in the process. I have moved this person to this next step. I'm that much closer to the end. And each step that gets them closer to the end exerts more control over that person.
Mm.
And so when you want to think
about... It's a weird kind of satisfaction.
Exactly. You want to think about the axis of evil.
Yeah.
This is truly the axis of evil that we're moving them. And so one of the other techniques, or some of the other techniques that they're using right now, is when you have a child that gets caught up in this type of issue, this sextortion issue, they will actually do a check on that person through open source information and will lay down landmines, little comments like, gee, I hope your dog Fifi doesn't get hurt.
Oh, nice.
And they have a dog named Fifi. And when I first heard this, I thought, you've got to be kidding. This type of information is not on the internet.
Yeah.
Or it shouldn't be. And I was sitting in a class, and we took a break one day and came back from break. And the instructor in the class that I was in said, hey, Paul, how's your wife doing? She's fine. I said, okay. She's still enjoying teaching? Yeah. And he goes, well, how about Sam? I go, my dog? Yeah, your dog. How about him? He's okay. Well, you know, he's due for a rabies shot coming up soon.
Who's telling you this?
The instructor.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, uh-oh, we've gone too far. This world's gotten weird.
Yeah.
And then he says, I'm really sorry about your son's first marriage. I'm sorry it didn't work out. And what had happened is we took a break, and the class was on computer security.
Sure.
What's available.
And you went and checked your computer security.
We had taken a break, and I had left my binder sitting there, and there had been a handout, and I'd written my name on the top of the handout. He knew, obviously, my name. He knew where I was from. And while we took a 5-10 minute break, he's getting this information. Well, if he's getting that information back in 1982.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, 1992. then
roughly the same data set.
What's available now?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So to use private information is another way of grooming. To use school information is also another way of grooming. We've seen some cases where the offender will refer to somebody, like in your case, say, "Hey, Aaron, you old matador, you," and that happens to be the mascot of your school. Well, then you know that they know, and they know that you know, and now there's a power struggle, and that power struggle just got won.
Yeah. How much?
And
what else do you know?
They have power over you. Yes. They'll look at your social media postings.
Oh, my God. And you know, people seriously put everything on there. It's like, for Lord's sake, people.
We were just having a discussion in my home about this because I have a relative that likes to post pictures of what she fixed for dinner.
Yep, there's a lot of that. It was funny. I was just going to make a crack about that. Good thing I didn't.
Yeah.
You got a relative with the monkey on their back. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's okay for her. I appreciate that. But you'd be surprised at what people put in information. In fact, today's newspaper, there was an article that said digital safety experts now say that parents should never show their children's faces when posting photographs on the internet.
Yeah.
And so I read that, and then 2 minutes later I'm on Facebook, and my friend's got a picture of his beautiful, darling little 3-year-old and has her identified by name. And so
I like the ones where people are on vacation and they're posting all their information about their vacation
that.
In
yeah,
real time.
I've seen those. I've
and you're
that.
Like, gosh, you know, this would be a great time to break into their house.
Yeah.
Since they're in, you know,
and
some other place.
You know, the other way offenders get that information to start that grooming process is they look to see who your friends are. Because there's quite a status to have a lot of friends and have a lot of friends listed, whether it's in Facebook or LinkedIn, mm-hmm. or there's a whole myriad of different platforms out there, especially for elementary and junior high school kids. And part of that process of success or showing people that you're successful as a student and as a friend is that you have a whole list
right.
of friends. Well, once they have that information, then here comes... It opens up the door to make threats to you.
Well, they can go to all those people's yep. Facebook page
yes.
and see what more information they can glean about you through them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can look backward at you.
Yeah. And one case one of my counterparts is involved in right now is a young man who's 16 years old. He's developed an alternate revenue stream. So what he's developed is a marketing process using the internet at 16 where he's making $3,000 to $5,000 a month.
Wow.
On that process. However, the offender has contacted him and said, "I know who your mama is. I know who your friends are. I know what school you go to. And I know you're running an internet marketing process and you're not paying a dime worth of taxes on it. Now, let's talk about what you're going to do." So this grooming process is all friendly until a certain point.
Then the fear comes in.
And then there's a fear or a demand that
okay.
takes place. And that demand can be satisfied by either more pictures, live streaming, money, obviously. And so it runs the whole gambit of demands based on the offender's knowledge that they have something over on the poor child.
Hmm.
Is there any, does it work? I guess it totally depends on the individual. Okay, so that said, is this something that works better on girls than boys?
Yes.
Teenage than high school? Is there a single kid, you know, a only child versus kid from a big family? Kid with two parents, kid with one parent? Is there any kind of spatial thing to that?
Oh, you used the word again, didn't you?
Yeah, to the victim
pool.
That's
pretty good.
How about these spatial aspects of the victim pool?
That was awesome, Aaron. You know,
you meant Officer Aaron.
Officer. Detective Aaron.
The
interesting part about this whole issue of extorting children is that it runs the full gamut.
Yeah.
Everything from children who don't have anything, but they can get online. And we've had cases and know of cases where children were online at the local library.
Sure.
And were somehow got connected with an offender at the local library to children who have their own computer lab in their bedrooms. So there's no clear-cut victim pool, so to speak, that you can look at and say, well, if we could focus all of our attention on this group,
right,
then everything's going to work out fine.
I figured you would have beaten the odds by now. You know, you guys could have slammed the door shut.
Would have been all over that one. So here's what we do at NCMEC. First of all, we work in conjunction with both local, state, and federal law enforcement all the time. One of the questions I get asked a lot, especially when I'm doing presentations to service clubs, is, are we prepared for this type of thing in our community? And my answer is twofold. Number one, it's occurring in your community. People are getting arrested in your community. And yes, we're prepared for it. In the North State, we are so fortunate. We have one of the only certified CART child abduction response teams in this area, and it's in this area, the Redding, Red Bluff area. These people are ready to respond at a minute's notice, and when they show up, they mean business and they get things done. We also have police chiefs and sheriff in this county that treat these types of cases as priority one cases, and that thought process trickles down to the investigators, and the investigators jump on these things really, really fast. The problem with these cases is that we can jump on them real fast. We can get really excited and go, 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 go. And at some point, a stop sign comes up. And the stop sign is usually technology. And so we have to find out, what is the IP address? Where's the person doing this from? Can we even find that? Is the person using a VPN? If the person's using a VPN, then that creates a whole another thing. On TV, you'll see one detective called another detective and say, we need a search warrant for here. You got it, bucko.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, no. Right.
No. Search warrant has to include the probable cause for the search, all the items you want to search for, and the expertise of the person asking for the search. That's a huge document. And then you have to find a judge to sign it. And judges don't duck investigators by any means. But judges also have a primary job, and that's to conduct court.
Right.
So nothing happens fast. So the frustration for law enforcement, at least from local law enforcement and the investigators that I work with on a daily basis, is that when these cases pop up, they want it done now. And they're losing sleep. They're not putting any attention to their other cases. This is priority case number one. And then when that stop sign comes up, the technology stop sign, that creates all kinds of frustration.
Sure.
Wow. Well, that's okay. So that's if they're going to abduct them. I guess, let's see. Oh, we've got a few minutes. I'm curious, how many of these never involve physical contact?
Most.
Okay. So they're not all designed to lure your kid to a park in the middle of the night so they can sell them to someone in a foreign country or whatever. Like it, that's kind of the less...
It is. It's a lesser percentage. The idea is to, and I hated to use
it's
that.
Probably easier and more lucrative to exploit somebody, especially now online. I mean, where your hands off the whole time and potentially you disappear into the ether. How many of them are out of the country too? Okay, that's like 17 questions. Go ahead and do those in any order you'd like.
I will do that. A lot of them are out of country.
Okay.
And a lot of them are out of state because they want to have some curtain between them, or a wall between them and the victim. But it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. It could be the next door neighbor. And we've had cases like that where it's somebody in the neighborhood who has observed this person for a time, found them on social media, and then start this whole process again, or start this process up, and then go through it.
Wow. Yeah, wouldn't that... And are people just... I'm sure they're super surprised that it's the next-door neighbor when that eventually comes up.
It's interesting. We saw that.
Remember they have like Spidey sense?
Remember
they were
the Murdoch
like, case? That guy was weird.
The Murdoch case back in North Carolina where he was
the one that never goes away, that just keeps going?
The pillar of the community, and all of a sudden everybody realizes, oh my goodness, he's a murderer.
Yeah.
He's worse than that. I mean, he's involved in everything. And we saw that with BTK, the BTK killer, the blind torture killer. He was the choir director.
Oh, look at Ted Bundy.
Everybody was shot. Ted Bundy, the same
thing.
There's
tons of that.
Yeah, the same thing. So, you know, there's those friends of mine that are in the psychiatry world that said we all live two lives. It just depends on the level of those two lives that we live. But we see those all the time.
Well, we're going to have a second life with Paul Skinner in the second hour here. We're going to talk about some more of this. You can find us at We the People Radio.
.us.